WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro.
You're my deja vu. It sounds obsessive, but I think it's fine. When you're gone, all I do is think of you. I live in love with you, this charming life. When you left, then I found that you took my heart. It sounds so corny, yes, I know it does. But the truth is the shame that I choose to wear. I live in love with you, this charming life.
This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. I'm Dick Paddock, your co-host, along with Lori Hoyt, and we're going to have a couple of minutes break while we're waiting for our guests to arrive. So we'll be back shortly.
Hey, hey, that everybody gets the chance to say,
National League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call, on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on your FM dial, or streamed from the website WCOMFM.org. I'm Dick Paddock, co-host, and across from me is Lori Hoyt, other co-host, and sitting, standing actually next to me is Emily O'Hare, our camera operator, and of course, the person we're here to interview, go ahead and...
I want to introduce Mike Renke.
Hi, good to meet you.
And you are, how new are you, the new head of Interfaith Council?
I've had the honor to be the executive director for the Interfaith Council for Social Service for the past 3 months.
Yeah, I thought you were new. Yeah.
Yes. No,
what a big job.
Thank you.
Yeah. So are you from this area or did you relocate here?
Well, I've lived in North Carolina since 2012. I came here from Bellingham, Washington, which is the largest city, if you will, in the northwest corner of the contiguous United States.
So this is a whole different climate.
It is, although the funny thing is I just read that Raleigh, with all the rain we've had this year, Raleigh has passed Seattle as the most rainy city in the country.
Oh, I didn't know that, really?
It's truly, yeah.
I thought we just felt it was a lot of rain.
No,
but
it's been a lot of rain.
It's been a lot. So did you come here for this? No, if you came in 12, you came.
No, I came in 2012. I had a very good friend here who said, you might like living in North Carolina. There was a job at Duke University with the School of Public Policy, and good public policy is something that's very important to me. I was very interested in trying to see how could we support it more. I don't know if you're familiar with the writing of Robert Reich, former labor secretary.
Oh, one of my favorite people.
He had a really good essay the other day. He talked about how we oftentimes look at problems as they sort of materialized out of thin air, but really most of the problems we have in the United States are actually public policy problems. Mm-hmm. People talk about issues of housing and affordable housing and the segregation of housing in the United States. Well, all that can be traced back to U.S. government public policy where, 50, 60, 70 years ago, it was actually written into federal housing law that neighborhoods were going to be segregated. So having good public policy was something that was really important to me, and so I very much wanted to support the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University.
I didn't know that it was that official.
Oh, it was absolutely official, yeah. Written into how they – whether you could not have a mortgage if you were Caucasian, if your deed did not also say that it was exclusive in terms of who was able to live there and purchase your home after you.
It always gets a little more depressing. You think, oh, my gosh. I just want to mention, do we say that this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom? Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm talking to Mike, is it?
Michael Reinke.
Michael?
Yeah.
Michael Reinke.
My dad was going to change the spelling of our last name to Reinka because he thought people would pronounce it more accurately, but he never did. I'm on a one-person mission to teach all of the United States at least one word of German.
Okay, so it's Michael Reinke.
Reinke.
Reinke. Oh, I'm pronouncing that wrong, too. Michael Reinke.
Yeah.
Okay. And so 3 months ago, you took on a huge job as the executive director of Interfaith Council. And I'd like us to start off, I think a lot of our listeners probably know something about Interfaith Council. I just read recently that Chapel Hill has a turnover of about 50% mm-hmm. each year.
That makes sense.
It's a transitional community, so a lot of people could be relatively new and think they know something about it. But I wonder, I'd like to start off because I think you have a much more extensive mandate than a lot of people mm-hmm. realize. But I'd also like to start off a little bit of about the history because I think it's such an interesting history.
Absolutely. The first thing you should really know is that the Interfaith Council was started by seven powerful women. I guess that's probably not a surprise because most things, women play a really important role in our history. And specifically for the Interfaith Council, we would not be here today if those seven church women hadn't said, there are problems in our community and we need to do more.
I knew it was churches, but I didn't know mm-hmm. that women led the charge. But that's not surprising. Right.
And they went to the Minister's Council, and there was a young minister at the time, Reverend Bob Seymour, who said, you're absolutely right. And they all got together, Reverend Seymour, those seven women. Unfortunately, I haven't remembered their names, but they all got together. And the first thing they did was actually they said, we need to feed the hungry. And they started doing a lunchtime feeding program in our community. That feeding program has moved to different locations. It's currently located on Columbia and Rosemary, but it still continues today.
I know that, now it's three meals a day.
We're a little bit of transition.
Okay.
So up until this past September, we had the community house, the shelter for single men, and the community kitchen co-located in the same location.
Yeah.
At 100 West Rosemary. And on September 24th, we moved the single men's shelter up to 1315 Martin Luther King Boulevard.
A very exciting year's planning and getting that fruition. And
exciting is a good word for it.
Beautiful building.
Yeah, it is an amazing building. And if we have a chance, I'd love to talk about it. But one of the things we found was that it seemed that most, if not all, of the people who were coming to the community kitchen for breakfast were actually the guys who were staying there.
Okay.
And so since we're now providing breakfast for the guys up at the CQ. We call it the CQ Community House because the member owners of CQ, the State Employees Credit Union,
yes,
provided a $1 million grant to make that building happen.
I'm a member of CQ, and I didn't know they did that. Hooray for CQ.
Thank you very much. And so since we're providing breakfast up there, we weren't getting very many people at all coming in for breakfast. So we're not offering breakfast at that location. If it turns out that, more people start coming in saying, I could really use some breakfast for whatever reason, that's certainly something we can bring back.
Mm-hmm.
But we do offer lunch 7 days a week, and the lunch tends to have between 60 and 70 people. People from all walks of life. One of the misconceptions that we have about a community kitchen is that sometimes people think that a community kitchen mainly serves the homeless. Well, actually, shelters tend to serve the homeless. Community kitchens, certainly not exclusively, but by and large, the vast majority of the people who are going to community kitchen are people who have housing. But, times like they are, it's hard to make all your ends meet on a very low budget. And so maybe if you're on a fixed income or maybe if you're working part-time, one of the ways you can stretch everything together is if you go to the community kitchen and you'll get lunch. And again, lunch is offered 7 days a week. We only offer dinner 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, because as I'm sure you're aware, public transportation Chapel Hill and Carrboro, we have more access to public transportation Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that the buses don't run on Sunday, so it's
very
hard for people to get there.
Very sparse.
So,
I used to go to the community church, and then they volunteered on different days, a breakfast, lunch, and supper, and I helped out with lunch different times. And I was just so impressed by the quality of the lunches. They would pull together donations of all sorts, fresh and canned. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple of excellent cooks in our contingent, and just marvelous meals, better than a lot of restaurants in terms of, really delicious, and the quality was just wonderful.
And you have people coming to volunteer. So as you may know, today there are 57, communities of faith, including...
I didn't know how many.
Yeah,
57.
Including the Chapel Hill Carrboro Ethical Society. Both Judea Reform and Temple Kahila, I believe several of the Buddhist communities, as well as many Protestant and Catholic congregations are volunteering. And they all will say, I'd like to do the first Monday lunch. Or another will say, we do the fourth Tuesday dinner. And believe it or not, those teams, if you will, that get together, it's hard to get into them. We actually had one of our board presidents. This is a couple of years back. We had a board president named Ann, and Ann had served on our board for many years. She was our board president. And even then, she had to wait 2 years before she was able to get onto a team of people that could come and...
It's very popular.
Yes, it is popular.
Because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun working with a team, planning and getting the meal together. It really is. And of course, you just feel very gratified that to feed people. It's a very good feeling.
Absolutely. And I'll find people, people that I'll be having a conversation with, and it turns out, the provost of UNC, Jim Dean, turns out he had made breakfast at the community kitchen for many years. I was like, who knew?
So the meals continue, and at the men's shelter, you provide breakfast. Are other meals provided there also?
We provide breakfast. We provide dinner. We also will provide a lunch if people are going out. And, some people who are staying at the shelter and working, it can be nice to buy your own lunch.
Yeah.
But if you're not able to buy your own lunch, we'll give people a meal to go.
Yeah.
There are some people staying at the shelter. Unfortunately, the way that we support people who are disabled in the United States, we don't give the disabled enough support. And so oftentimes, one of the reasons why people will come in to stay at the shelter is because they're living with a disability. A disability doesn't give you a whole lot of income. It maybe is $700, $800, $900 a month. That can be enough if nothing goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But if anything goes wrong, mm-hmm. then you don't have any margin. You can easily lose your housing. And so these are people that can't work, staying in the shelter. So while they're saving enough money to move back into their own permanent housing, they might come to the kitchen to volunteer to help clean up and things like that. So, again, most of the people who are staying at the CQ Community House are going out and they're maybe eating at their workplace or mm-hmm. they're taking a back lunch. But some people will come to the community kitchen to help out and also to have a lunchtime meal.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I did help with the community church, a lot of working construction mm-hmm. workers would come in, a lot of workers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just so nice for them because they don't make that much money to have a nice meal there. They seem to really appreciate it. So, yeah, it's quite a diverse population.
Mm-hmm. We don't think about it, for those of us who are fortunate enough to have employment all through the year, we don't think about what happens in the wintertime when the inclement weather will shut down a job site.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are a person who's in the construction trade, or maybe you're somebody who helps fix our roads or something like that, oftentimes you're not working January, February, mm-hmm. perhaps even December and March. For those families,
mm-hmm.
Even though most of the year they're doing okay,
mm-hmm.
Winter can be a difficult time,
yeah.
and that's when oftentimes we'll see the number of families who are going to the community, it will tick up. And that's actually another point that I would just want to make, which is that, sometimes we think about people who are homeless, or sometimes we think about people who are in poverty as this is sort of a fixed population, much as if I were to describe to you there are between 10 and 15% of the people living with us are left-handed. The people who are left-handed don't change. If you're left-handed today, you're going to be left-handed tomorrow, and you were probably left-handed yesterday. However, if you're living in poverty, poverty is not a condition which is a distinct demographic. It's more a condition which happens to you because of some kind of disaster. I like to call it a micro-disaster, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So when Hurricane Fran came through the state, we had a natural disaster where thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands of people lost their housing.
Yeah.
We are seeing the same kind of natural disasters, but they're happening on a micro level. They're happening to one family, one individual at a time.
And also with the recession in 2008, so many people lost jobs who had many of them decent jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do they say, that most American families are three paychecks away from disaster.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how well you're doing, it doesn't take much.
That's
or some getting sick or some big medical bills, and you find yourself in a very scary situation.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And we have a conversation in our country about the deserving and undeserving poor. It's been going on for decades, if not centuries.
Yeah.
There are some people who are deserving of help, and there are other people who are undeserving. I happen to believe that we're all human beings. We all can make mistakes. I've certainly made, my share.
Same here.
But hopefully people still see me as a human being who's worth a second or perhaps even a third chance.
And
I think that's really sort of fundamental to the Interfaith Council. We don't assume that everybody who comes into us is an angel, but mm-hmm. we also believe that everybody who comes to us needs a second chance. And even sometimes when they're with us, they'll need a third chance or a fourth chance.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that there's not consequences, but it does mean that we're trying to provide opportunities for people to get back on their feet and be all that they can be.
We're talking to Michael Runca, the new executive director of the Interfaith Council, and he's been filling us in for anybody who has not known about the Interfaith Council, some of its history and some of the programs that they have. And I know that there's also, we haven't covered all of them. I know that mm-hmm. there's the food pantry mm-hmm. in downtown Carrboro.
Absolutely. Well, I want to just go back to our history for a second.
Yeah,
you know, one of the things that I found was interesting. I was talking to Pastor Rick Edens, who's up with the United Church, right next door to the new CQ Community House.
And I want to give a shout out to that church, because that church, with all the many, many public meetings, some controversy about, mm-hmm. you know, not in my backyard kinds of feelings. It's right next door to that church, the United Church of Chapel Hill, and that church was stalwart in supporting and being there in long meeting after meeting. And mm-hmm. I was just so impressed, because, you know, some churches might say, gee, you know, our choir people becoming at 10 o'clock at night, they may be a little nervous.
That's right.
And they said, we're welcome them, we're going to be working with them, we're mm-hmm. going to be volunteering. You know, they just were wonderful. I have to put that 2 cents worth in for them. And it's not my church, but I was very impressed.
I think, to a degree, even though I don't attend there, they're all of our church. I think they really stood up. We would not be here.
No.
We would not have the community house where it is today without them.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it was their unflagging, enthusiastic mm-hmm. support that made it come to pass.
Well, Pastor Gaines, he was very young in his ministry at the time. This was maybe the mid 80s, but he was talking about how at the time IFC had been around for maybe 20 years, but how it was very volunteer driven, so much so that I mentioned that we have today 57 member congregations, communities of faith, ethical societies. That each one of them would have a delegate. So very formal voting, and you would go to our annual meeting, and those delegates would have a vote, and they would vote for who the members of the board of directors were going to be. We don't have quite such strong volunteer leadership today, but I can tell you that that tradition of volunteers really embodying the organization carries through today. We have essentially 21 full-time equivalent staff people. We have some part-time people together. I'll make 21. But we have over 250 volunteers who will do things like pick up bread from Panera or volunteer to be the first person people see when they come into our office at 110 West Main Street here in Carrboro. We have volunteer social workers. I want to give a shout out to Carol Ross, who's a volunteer and board member. She was a psychiatric nurse up in Connecticut before she and her husband moved down here, and she started the mental health clinic within the IFC. All volunteer. She was never paid a dime. In fact, I think she maybe even gave us some financial support in addition to all of that.
Wow.
So that tradition historically of depending on volunteers, when you include the people who come in to make even breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because volunteers are still helping with breakfast but at the community house, we probably have over 1,000 unduplicated volunteers coming in to help make our world a little bit better place all the way through every calendar year.
And that participation is what builds community support, why
Absolutely.
You're able to have the new men's shelter. There's the mm-hmm. woman. So I don't want us to, don't let me forget mm-hmm. or you forget, right. that we say all of the many services. Some people right. know about this particular thing, maybe the pantry, or they know maybe about the shelter. But I don't think a lot of people know the full extent of what IFC offers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the pantry, because that kind of is a nice pairing with the community kitchen.
Yeah,
The pantry is located here at in Carrboro at 110 West Main.
Mm-hmm.
We've been here since 2001. And actually in 2003, we had the opportunity to take out a mortgage and purchase that building. And okay. so we are not just supporting the community as providers of service. We're also property owners, and we've been supported several nonprofit and for-profit businesses have actually located at our building over the years. So we like to say we're good landlords and good neighbors in addition to being good providers of support. But again, in that building, we'll provide a community pantry. And every day, you will have people who will come in and bring in a bag of food, bring in two bags of food. Oftentimes, if it's something like the Newman Center or Chapel of the Cross or Damascus, the Methodist out on Damascus Road, they'll bring in, you know, maybe 10 bags of food or 40 bags of food. There are some churches who actually have are trying something called Feeding of the 5,000. So you may remember from the New Testament that story of feeding the 5,000
loaves and fishes. Yes.
Well, there are some churches who said, you know, we're gonna shoot to feed 5,000, and that will be our goal. So over the next month, we're gonna see if we can't get enough food from everybody in the congregation to feed 5,000 people. What that means is that over the course of the year, the food pantry will serve. We call them members. So 4,000 members, unduplicated, different people, will come in through the year. They can come in right now as often as once a month, and they will get enough groceries that will last for a week. Now, ideally, we would be able to give enough groceries so that nobody would be hungry in Orange County. But right now, what we can do is offer people groceries for 1 week. We make that happen, again, through the donations from folks in the community. That can be individuals. That can be different churches. That could be Weaver Street Market. I don't know if you went to Weaver Street Market over the last month or two,
yes.
but they were doing, I believe, an apple drive. And so we had apple. We served a whole bunch of apples because of the Weaver Street Market. Or Interfaith Food Shuttle, which is a triangle-wide, will bring us, for example, when we did the Thanksgiving dinners just a couple weeks ago, we gave out broccoli that was the Interfaith Food Shuttle brought to us. So
Interfaith Food Shuttle is mm-hmm. different than the IFC.
It is. I mean, they're both interfaith, so yeah, working with a lot of different folks.
Yeah.
But the Interfaith Food Shuttle is really about how do we get food to the hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, we live in the most wealthy country in the world. Orange County
is
probably
county.
one of the most wealthy counties in North Carolina,
yeah.
probably does pretty well nationwide. There's no reason why people need to be hungry in our community.
Yeah.
And Interfaith Food Shuttle works on saying, how do we get the resources from here over to there where they're needed? But the pantry, again, serves 4,000 unduplicated members. We give away anywhere between 15,000 to 18,000 bags of food in a given year. That's amazing. And at the same time, we'd like to be able to do more, especially with fresh produce.
Yeah.
Let's take a bit of a break now.
Okay.
It's about that time. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. I'm Dick Paddock, co-host, and Lori sitting over there. Lori Hoyt is my co-host. And Emily O'Hare is on the camera, and our guest today is Mike Reinke.
Yes, very good.
Michael Reinke.
Reinke.
Yeah,
yes.
that was the foreign language I took in college.
There you go.
It's still
right there.
Over. And we are taking a break now to let you know that this is WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 100-watt FM station that you probably can't get unless you're fairly close into Carrboro. But you can go on your computer and go to the station's website and it's WCOMFM.org. And if you go to that website, you can pick us up and stream us on your computer so you can listen to us while we're on the air.
She drives the camera.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And we need to tell you that we are an all-volunteer group. That's the Women's International League. And also, WCOM is an all-volunteer group. And we've got another all-volunteer group that we're associated with, which is Internationalist Bookstore. Used to be on Franklin Street, but now it's right here in Carrboro on Lloyd Street, right across from the radio station and the rest of the Art Center. And I need to read one thing requesting your support. For 10 years, your community radio station, WCOMLP 103.5, has been a nonprofit, all-volunteer community radio station serving Carrboro and Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. WCOM can only do this with the support of the community. Please go to www.wcomfm.org, that's the station's website that I mentioned earlier, right now, and make your safe, secure online donation through PayPal to keep your station strong. Or you can drop a check in the mail to WCOMFM, and the address is 300 G East Main Street in Carrboro, zip code 27510. Whether big, little, or in the middle, every donation matters.
And I want to put a little plug in for the Rogers Road Community Center. They're doing a toy drive now. I forget how many kids they help out, but it's a huge amount. I should know, but I forget, but it's a lot. I don't want to put too little or too big, but I know it's more than a couple hundred, I think. Mm-hmm. And so if you could make a donation, they're on, what street are they on, Edgar?
Yeah, Edgar Street at the intersection with Purefoy.
Yeah, you could just put Rogers Road Community Center, I don't know the number, but Edgar Street, Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. And donations of money is fine. You can stop by there. If you've never seen it, you must go by there. They just celebrated their first year anniversary, and they, like IFC, have a lot of programs, tutoring, all kinds of activities for kids in the neighborhood, and some come from other neighborhoods. And so money or toys, if you do a toy, don't wrap it, because then they can see if it's appropriate for the particular child. So stop by if you haven't seen the community center. It's just really a beautiful building, and they're very proud, and it's really taken hold in the community. That talk about community mm-hmm. support. That
also books and school materials.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, thank you, Emily. Yeah. So I just want to put that plug in, and don't let us forget before we end the program for you to also put a plug in for how people
absolutely.
can donate money or food or mm-hmm. whatever they can to Interfaith Council. Christmas time is here, and this is a time when you feel good about giving, mm-hmm. and this is so... This is a wonderful place to give. Feeding the hungry is the most basic thing that we can do.
Absolutely.
I mean, that really is before we do anything else, and there's many things that are important, affordable housing, education, but feeding the hungry, we've got to – that's one of your essential basic things in life.
It seems pretty fundamental to me.
Yes, it does.
If I'm in a room and I ask everybody who's had one meal today to raise their hand. Most, if not everybody, raises their hand. And if I say, would you please keep your hand up if you've had two meals today, again, most, if not all of the hands stay up. And if I say, would you keep your hand up if you've had three meals today, again, most, if not all of the hands stay up. And it's just something that we oftentimes take for granted. And yet people don't realize that, believe it or not, 9 to 10% of all seniors in our community and across the country are food insecure and are having to skip a meal or two, if not more, because they don't have enough resources for food. That one of every three people who experience hunger in our country are children. Approximately about 14 million people in our country are food insecure, where somebody in the household is going without a meal because they don't have enough food.
And I don't know what the statistic is, but it's shocking in a wealthy county like Orange County how many children are hungry. And
We know that there are approximately 2,500 children in Orange County schools who are eligible for free and reduced lunch. There's a wonderful organization, our community table, that is providing after-school backpacks. So backpacks where they will fill up the backpack on Friday and bring them to the schools, and then the kids will take them home to make sure that they have food to get through the weekend. So that's a wonderful thing.
When they're not getting their meals at school. And, you know, that is a sad thing about our society. I mean, it really is. But thank goodness in Orange County there at least is interfaith.
Right.
There's table.
There's porch. There's Orange congregations and mission up
in
Hillsboro.
There's
Meals on Wheels. There's a lot of good organizations. There's a lot of great people who are out there saying, you know, in our community, this shouldn't happen, and we're going to at least do what we can.
Yeah, I live in First Baptist in Manly Estates, and Meals on Wheels comes to our place for some, not for everybody, but for some of our residents, and that is a lifesaver for some of them.
I was, among the other things we do at 110 West Main Street, we do many things.
We
have a pantry there, but one thing we do is actually we do Thanksgiving dinners. So there are families who would otherwise not have a Thanksgiving dinner or a Christmas holiday dinner, and we people will sign up. And this year we actually had 410 dinners. So that would be a full turkey, broccoli, collard greens, as well as stuffing and gravy and all those other things that you would want to have for a celebratory dinner. And there was one gentleman there who actually had stayed at the community house several years ago. He's doing okay today, but he's living in one of those communities where you need to be 55 years or older to live. And he was there not picking up food for himself, but he was picking up food for other folks that were living there. And it was wonderful that he could give back, but it also spoke to me about how, you know, the need is much greater, you know, and oftentimes for folks that, you know, for children, for seniors, for the disabled, the need is oftentimes hidden because they're not out there on the street. You know, that we can see the person on the street and we say, oh my gosh, or wow, that person should, you know, get back on their feet or something. But we don't see the children, the people who are 60, 70, 80, even 90 years old, who are trying to figure out how do I get enough food to make it through the week. So I'm sorry. So going back to what we do at 110 West Main, we do give away holiday dinners there. But we also provide a certain amount of financial assistance. Believe it or not, we provide, I believe it is $150,000 worth of financial assistance to people who either live in Chapel Hill Carborough or work in Chapel Hill Carborough. So actually we end up serving a fair number of people who live in Alamance, in Chatham, in Durham, in Person County, because they're coming in to Chapel Hill or Carborough to work. And if they are, but they're having a hard time making ends meet, then we will help. We have three staff people who work about 25 to 30 hours a week. We have one director of emergency services. Her name is Kristen Laverne. Amazing. Kristen's been with us, I want to say, about 20 years. She's just remarkable. And those staff people will work with at least 10, if not 15 to 20 volunteers. So if you were to come in and say, I can't pay my rent, or my car is broken down, or maybe I need some help with medication. I think folks might have thought back when Medicare did the prescription medicine, mm-hmm. that, okay, well, now everybody can afford medication. But, you know, there is that, what do they call it?
Copay,
and there's a donut hole, and there's all those things. And so we'll get people who are, you know, coming in saying, I can't pay my copay, I can't pay, you know, I'm having a hard time making the donut hole. And again, volunteers working with paid staff will interview them, they'll make a decision, and we give away, again, about $150,000 worth of assistance.
I knew you helped with utility bills, I think, once a year. I think mm-hmm. you can get help with your utility bill. I didn't know about, like, if your car broke down and you couldn't afford to get it fixed.
True.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah.
We also work with, we probably all have some mixed feelings about utility companies, and we certainly want the lights on, but, you know, we probably wish that they would be better stewards of the environment. But we do work with Duke Energy and several other utility companies. It's not a big program, but over the past year, we've replaced several families' heating and cooling systems, either because they weren't working at all or because they were very, very inefficient and, you know, the family was paying way too much for utility help. Also, OWASA, Orange Water and Sewer Association. OWASA members will contribute to a fund that then can go to help people who are having a hard time paying their water bill. And we are the intermediary that tries to identify those folks and help them out with their water bill.
I knew there were things that I didn't know, mm-hmm. and that's wonderful.
I'm gonna keep on going just on what we do at 110 West Main Street.
Yes,
there's a organization.
Excuse me, let me ask one thing. Is that where your main offices are now? The community house is built, or is your main office?
No, our main offices are at 110 West Main Street in Carrboro.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
As are several other organizations, because it's a big building. And so,
I know People of Faith Against the Death Penalty, at least used to be upstairs, and then there was something like an El Centro was next door, but I think something else is there.
El Futuro was located there, and right now we have a Burmese grocery store downstairs.
Yeah,
so, there's all sorts of different organizations there. There's another organization called Blanket Orange County that collects blankets, and so we will give away blankets at that location. There's an organization that collects books for children. And so their thought is that no child in Orange County should live in a home that doesn't have books to read. And so they will collect books, and we're one of the places that gets them out there. I've said it before, but we really depend on a huge number of partners, whether they're individuals or organizations. Mm-hmm. They all kind of work together to make it all happen. And one last program I would mention is called Support Circles. And I'm really, really excited about this program. It's something that's new to IFC and relatively new to Orange County. I think it was kind of a volunteer program for a year or two, and then they needed some staffing support, and so we brought it under our umbrella. And Support Circles, I think you've probably heard that term, it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually try to organize that village. So if you have an individual, most often an individual who is leaving a homeless shelter and going into permanent housing,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a very dicey time. That's a time when a lot of things can go wrong. So we organize typically through a community of faith. It doesn't have to be, but typically through a community of faith, we will organize a team of 5 to 10 individuals who provide that village around that individual.
Yeah.
Sometimes helping with transportation if the transportation breaks down. Sometimes helping, child care could be a possibility,
mm-hmm.
grocery store, going to the pharmacy, whatever it is. Helping with a job interview, whatever it is. That team of 5 to 10 people provides a support circle to help somebody stay on their feet.
So that's a pretty new thing to be under your umbrella.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, well, that's exciting because I imagine that some people don't have families, and to not have any support and to be all of a sudden on your own like that,
right.
Yeah, that would be really scary, paying the bills and not sure how things are going.
Absolutely. And then the two other programs that you may be familiar with IFC, one is the Community House and the other is Home Start. Home Start provides emergency and transitional shelter to single women. There are beds for 17 single adult women over the age of 18. There are also 10 shelters for women with children. Now, those 10 shelters, that's a wonderful thing that we're able to provide. But at the same time, we don't have any shelter right now for men with children. And we don't have any shelter for a man and a woman who are married or they've been together for a while and they also have children. We don't have any place for them. So we're looking to see what could we do to provide some kind of shelter for, again, men with children or
married couples
coming in. Yeah.
Well, when you say 10 shelters, you mean like 10, it's in that one Home Start building and there's like 10 little suites of rooms? Or
suite would be a strong word.
That would be a little... It would be more like maybe
slightly bigger than this room that we're in here. Sorry, I'm looking around and not at the microphone. But maybe a room about this size, to be honest.
So you can have the kids.
Mom can have the kids. They also have a bathroom that they can access. And then there's a room with a bathroom. And then there are four other rooms with a bathroom in one building. And then we have a second building that also has five bedrooms with bathrooms. And then they share a community space.
That's bigger than I realized. So, mm-hmm. So you have room for 17 single women and then
10 women with children.
10 yeah. women with children. That's wonderful.
It is really. Again, this is an amazing community, and the Interfaith Council has been very blessed by all the support that we've been offered. It wouldn't be right if I didn't brag a little bit about the Community House because
brag. It's exciting.
I don't know if you knew, but in one of my jobs, I was the director of a state coalition for the homeless in the state of Indiana. And I had a chance over those 3+ years to drive all around the state of Indiana visiting different shelters. Put 120,000 miles on my car in that time. And I saw a lot of different organizations. I saw a lot of different shelters. And I have to say, I've never seen a facility like we have at the CQ Community House. So we have all the things that you would hope to have at a shelter. So we have rooms that have 8 beds for guys staying there. I took friends of mine. Friends of mine came down from New York. They were actually going down to protest at the School of the Americas, and they thought they would stop by and see what I was doing here. And
Dick was at the School of the Americas.
Okay. You may have run into them. I don't know. Lorna and Bill Henkel. So they've been working with the homeless up in Secaucus, New Jersey, so right across the river. And they looked at the rooms that we are housing 8 guys, and they said, if this was back in New Jersey, we would have 12 guys or 16 guys.
Yeah.
They were just amazed by the amount of room we had. So we have that. We have lots of windows. We have lots of natural light. We have a library, which is actually named after the former director of IFC, Chris Moran.
Wonderful person.
Yeah.
I love Chris.
So we have a library named after Chris.
Good. He should have a lot named after him.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. We have an exercise room where the exercise equipment was donated by Carol Woods. So if there's anybody listening from Carol Woods, your old exercise equipment is now helping make sure people are healthy in the heart, in the lungs, as well as healthy in the head. So we have those kinds of things, but we have rooms dedicated to counseling, to therapy because people come into a shelter not just needing a job or financial assistance, they also come in needing somebody to talk to and maybe to work through some problems. We have rooms dedicated to job coaching. And then we have a medical clinic, thanks to Piedmont Health. We have a medical clinic located.
Hey, Piedmont, it's my clinic.
There you go. Brian Toomey and the entire staff there, they're amazing. They have a health clinic there. We also have a dental clinic there. I also should say that there's a conference room, which is open to different groups can come in and use the conference room if they'd like. The conference room is named for John and Pat Dorward, also a former director at IFC. So we're happy to honor them as well.
And don't you have some rooms where as people are doing better that they have a little bit more privacy?
Absolutely. That's one of the really exciting things about...
That they can work.
That's right. So oftentimes a shelter, it doesn't really feel like a home. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sad to say, but it doesn't. It's a place where you come in at maybe 7 o'clock at night, and then you need to leave at 8 o'clock, and, you know, it's not very supportive in that way. So we have entry level. People come in, and they're kind of getting it together. They're figuring out what their plan is. They move up a level, and you're saying, okay, well, now you have a job. Now you're starting to save money. When you've made some progress, let's say you've been there for a month, maybe two, then you have an opportunity to move up to the third level. And at the third level, you actually get your own key. At the third level, whereas before maybe you had to wash your clothes from 6 in the evening to 9 o'clock in the evening, if you're at the third level, you can, if you have a break, if you're not working on Fridays because you're instead working on Sundays, you can come in on Friday and wash your clothes during the day, just as anybody would if they had their own home. You know, we don't want 1315 MLK to be anybody's permanent home, but we want people to feel like that they have a home because it is their home. It's where they're living.
And I thought that they could move from a dorm to a semi-private.
That's right. So you could work.
Yeah, that's right. Work your way up.
So if you're moving to that third level, you actually have it's sort of a suite of rooms where there's two people for every room, but there's also a door that locks even to get into that suite. So
you have that sense of privacy.
A sense of, okay, I can put my stuff here and I don't have to worry about it walking away.
So it's sort of like state of the art. I mean, a lot of planning went into it. Enormous amount of planning. And so maybe it's one of the best men's shelters in the country.
It's certainly the best that I've seen.
Yeah.
I'm really amazed.
Yeah. And I know I brought the paper that there's been talk for quite a while about IFC hoping to expand that Douglas building in Carrboro. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about that?
Absolutely. So this has been a conversation that we've been having really for the past 8 years, if not longer. Of course, during that time, there was an awful lot of coverage about moving the men's shelter up north on MLK. And so even though we've been having that conversation about moving the community kitchen in with the pantry, I think most people, people are busy, there's a lot going on. And so we think that we've been communicating quite well, and people say, wow, that was a surprise. I didn't really realize that you were going to be doing that. But again, we've been talking about moving.
I've been hearing about it for a couple of years.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah. But I pay more attention maybe.
You might be paying a little bit more attention than most folks.
Than some other people.
But really, this is all about best practice. Mm-hmm. So we had a committee that came together and looked at how do we do best practice. We want to lead the industry, and how do we help people get food? So one of the things, if you go to any business school class at Keenan Flagger School of Business, they will talk to you about efficiency and how do we best, how are we good using our resources well. In the nonprofit world, we'd say, how are we good stewards of our resources? When you're duplicating different efforts at the same time, that's not very efficient. So if you have people who are sorting food and preparing food over at the community kitchen, and if you have people who are sorting food and handing out food over at the food pantry, again, that's not a very good use of resources. So if we bring them together,
makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And the other thing we notice is that at the food pantry here in Carrboro, we get a significant number of families of parents with children. And for whatever reason, we're not seeing them over at the community kitchen. And we think that by bringing those two programs together, there are many people in Orange County who believe that we can end hunger. Certainly at the IFC that we believe that we can end hunger. Mm-hmm. And we think that by bringing the community kitchen together with the pantry, we can get not even just a little bit, but maybe several steps towards our goal of ending hunger in our community. And so that it really is all about best practice. It's about how do we help people have access to food.
That means we've got 5 minutes to
how do we bring two programs together that are all about serving food? You know, there are several other things that we're interested in saying. If we had a different space, so we love the location. Mm-hmm. But that building is not designed to do what it really needs to do.
It's pretty old.
If you ever have a chance to visit it, and I'd encourage everybody to come by and visit, you'll notice that on the second floor, you go up a level, you go down a level, you go up a level again, you go down a level. Well, that's because, you know, different parts of it were built at different times, and I don't know, but they may have used different materials at those different times.
I was up to the second floor probably about 4 years ago doing work with People of Faith Against the Death Penalty. I had to write something up for church.
Yep.
And I remember it was pretty rickety stairs even to get up there, narrow.
Fortunately, everybody's been okay.
Yeah.
But, as a building, it doesn't need a rehab. It needs a complete redo.
I would not be surprised. It's pretty old and pretty, probably not that well built to begin with.
Old buildings, especially, a business owner might say, oh, well, I'll just add another shed on here, and then suddenly that becomes a part of the building. So it really needs a redo. But when that happens, one of the things that we'd like to do would be to say that, best practice for a food pantry is something called client choice. So right now we will give people a bag of groceries, and if you get a bag of groceries, I'm just going to make this up, but maybe it has 3 cans of Brussels sprouts and 2 cans of spinach. Well, if the family that we're giving to, they love Brussels sprouts, but they hate spinach, the spinach gets thrown away. So if we do client choice, then people can come in, they can say, okay, well, I know that I can choose enough food to make it through a week, or again, hopefully for two. And I know that the food that I choose needs to be a well-balanced diet. But now once I think about what that well-balanced diet is, I can choose. So if I like Brussels sprouts and I don't like spinach, I'm going to do 5 cans of Brussels sprouts because that's what my family eats. So let's make sure that we're getting the food that people need and that people will eat to the places where it needs to go. So those are the kinds of things. There has been some concern. I think that some people feel like, Michael, IFC, if you were to bring the community kitchen over to Carrboro, there might be some folks that would come over here. Where would they go in between meals? Now, the thing that people don't know, or maybe don't realize, is that actually a significant majority, the most of the people coming to a community kitchen are people who are working, are people who are housed.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, if there are people who don't have a place to go, if it would be helpful to the community, one of the things we've talked about is that we'd be willing to look into something like a day center where people could come in, a day center, resource center. So you could say, okay.
It's a place to hang out.
We hear about cooling shelters during the summer. We hear about heating centers during the winter. We'd be willing to offer that to the community if it would be helpful.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I don't want to say, we got 2 minutes, so I want to be sure we...
One
got
minute.
1 minute. Okay, so
So if people are interested in supporting IFC, this is a great time of year. I would encourage them to go to our website, which is ifcweb.org. Again, that's ifcweb.org. If they'd be interested in sending in a financial donation through the mail, then they could send it to 110 West Main Street, Carrboro, North Carolina, 27510. Again, that's 110 West Main Street, Carrboro, North Carolina, 27510. And they can always reach me at 919-929-6380. Again, 929-6380, and I'm at extension 14.
And you can also look up IFC in the phone book. Those, there's still some phone books around.
There are still some phone books.
That's
absolutely
how I found your number.
Yes.
and found out that you're extension 14. So, Michael Runke, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being
here. This is the Women's International League for